Blind Cool Tech 65, July 31, 2005. Hey y'all, how is everybody? I'm Larry Skukan, your host for this edition of Blind Cool Tech. We have got a fascinating show for you today. If you ever thought that an automated tactile map production system was a dream, take a listen to this presentation from Josh Mealy. Before we do, however, we finally actually got a guess on our mystery sound. And here's Don with his guess.
Hey, Larry, Don Barrett. I want to guess that sound. I have no idea, but I'm thinking it might be something like a butter churn. It sounds like you're spinning something that's spinning around in a circular kind of apparatus and making a lot of noise, like a big vase or a churn or a blade or something. I'll go with a butter churn. And at first I thought it was a lion roaring, but I knew it couldn't be that because you and Jake wouldn't have been happy. Anyway, we'll see what it is. Thanks, buddy. Bye.
Okay, Don, you're close. Actually, you were closer with the lion guess. So I'll throw that little hint out there and hope we'll hear more from you or some other listeners. Okay, Josh Mealy is a researcher at the Smith Kettlewell, and he has something very exciting to talk to us about. And I give you Josh Mealy.
Hi, everybody. My name is Josh Mealy. I'm a researcher here at the Smith Kettlewell Eye Research Institute in San Francisco. I'm here today to talk about the TMAP project. The TMAP stands for, it's T-M-A-P, stands for Tactile Maps Automated Production, and it is what it says it is. We are using computers to automatically produce tactile street maps of any place in the country. It's sort of like a Braille MapQuest or Yahoo Maps, if you're familiar with those. The idea is that a blind person can go to our website and tell it an address or an intersection, and you can then download onto your computer a printer or embosser-ready Braille map of the area that you requested. And you can then send that to your Braille embosser or your capsule paper or whatever, and it's automatically got nice Braille labels and scaling and all of that. And you can then take a look at that map and figure out the street network in that neighborhood. It's extremely exciting because, as you probably know, blind people have had very limited access to tactile street maps in the past. And it's because it's really difficult to create really high-quality tactile street maps, and you need someone with some skills and some time. Even then, it's going to take a while, so you won't be able to get the map right away. So what we've done is we've written a computer program and provided a web interface for it that allows a blind person to get almost instantly a very nicely formatted tactile street map with Braille labels of any neighborhood they want in the U.S. So we're really proud of it, and hope that you will be interested in trying it and telling us how we're doing. So a few things you'll want to know right off the bat, I'm sure, is, for example, what kind of embossers does it work with? Well, it works with all the graphics-capable Braille embossers. It works with the Index and the Enabling Technologies, and, of course, it works with the Tiger. I'm sure you'll also want to know What kind of computer you need to do it. You really could do it with almost any computer, so long as you have access to the internet and you just use a standard web browser like Internet Explorer or Netscape or whatever it is that you happen to be familiar with. So it's real simple, and we anticipate that this will be extremely useful for people who are trying to get to new places that they haven't been before. I have many times, when I go to conferences or whatever, printed out a Braille map ahead of time of the conference location. It's really great, for example, to be able to look at a map and say, whoa, I don't think I want to cross at that intersection. That one looks pretty hairy, like if there's, you know, five or six streets coming together, or it becomes obvious sometimes, okay, this street splits into two streets, so if I want to get down over here, I'll want to walk on the right-hand side of the street, or you can count blocks and say, okay, I'll want to walk 5 blocks to get to First Street. Maybe some of you have already seen the maps. We've been showing them at a number of conferences, the CSUN conferences the last couple of years, and RESNA, and maybe one or two others. So I certainly hope that the folks listening to this podcast will get an opportunity to check out our website at some point and see what the maps are all about, especially people who have a little bit of knowledge about how to use their embossers and so on. We're still, of course, testing this product, so it's not really ready for prime time. And, of course, it's free. You know, it's just a research project right now because we want to really see what kind of features are going to be useful and who's going to be wanting it and how it's all going to work. So it is free, and we're certainly interested in people trying it. Another basic question you might have is, does it use, you know, grade 1 Braille or grade 2 Braille? What size paper does it use? Stuff like that. And the answer is, that's all available to the user to specify. So when you start using the TMAP website, you get a login and a password. And then whenever you log in, it remembers your settings. So your settings are things such as what kind of Braille embosser you have, what size paper you like to use, whether you want your maps portrait or landscape, whether you want contracted Braille or uncontracted Braille, what scale of maps you tend to want to produce, and a few other things, like whether or not you want your scale represented in metric or English units. So these are all things that are customizable to each individual user. Another thing that the website provides is a map history. So whenever you create a map, it goes into your list of maps that you've created. So if you make a map and then you lose it, or you want to recall it and make some changes to the settings, for example, if you wanted to change the scale, you just go to your map history and you pull up that map and you change the scale and tell it to make a new map. And it provides you with a new map and you just download that one and print it out. Of course, we're going to be adding more features. There's all kinds of features that we can add, and we want to make it interact properly with GPS and all kinds of cool stuff. And part of what we want is feedback from our users as to you know, what sorts of features people would find useful and so on and so forth. So what I'd like to talk about next is some of the really nitty-gritty technical details. So I'll try to make it interesting for the non-techies, but I'm sure that the techie types are going to have some questions about how we made it and how it really works. So there are three basic parts to the way the system works. There's a GIS, which is Geographic Information System. There is the user interface, which is the website. And then, of course, there's the embossing part. Let's start by talking about a GIS. A GIS, a geographic information system, is a database of geographic objects. You can have anything in there. You can have roads or houses or lakes or mountains. Any kind of geographic item can be a record in your geographic information system. We happen to have mostly roads. In fact, we have only roads. By the way, when I say roads, I mean streets and roads and alleys and anything that you can drive a car on or walk on. And roads maybe would have a specific set of data fields for each record. So, for example, there are data fields for the name of the road, the latitude points along the road, the longitude points along the road, the address information as you move from block to block on a street or whatever. So it's a very flexible format. You can have all sorts of information included, but we've got a very simple data set, just roads and just a very limited set of fields containing information about those roads. A little footnote, by the way, about GIS. Many people are familiar with GPS, Global Positioning System, and there is a sort of misunderstanding about GPS very often. GPS actually, in its common usage, includes a GIS, because all a GPS can tell you is where you are on the planet, meaning latitude, longitude, and altitude, essentially. But in order to actually know what street you're on or what address you're in front of or what the streets are around you, the GPS needs a GIS in order to look up what's around us. So that's a little GPS footnote, and I'll talk a little bit more about GPS in a little bit. We use the same kind of data, but instead of using it in conjunction with a GPS, we use it to create maps. And that's what's done with the other mapping sites on the internet as well. So Yahoo Maps and Google and stuff, they use GIS as well. The data, that is the information in the database about the roads and so on, is free and available from the U.S. Census Bureau. So part of the process was taking their files, which are just flat text files with street information, and actually they've got all kinds of cool stuff in there, parks and government buildings and train lines, all sorts of stuff. We just extracted the street information because that's sort of the most basic information that we thought we wanted to provide on our maps. Of course, ultimately, it would be cool to add other stuff like parks and buildings and so on to our data, but we started with streets. So then there are the functions that actually manipulate the geographical data, and those functions are technically the GIS, the Geographic Information System, because those are the things that are doing the data manipulation. So such things as clipping the map region to the proper area, being able to sort streets and decide which ones to use and which ones not to use and so on. We wrote our own because there are a lot of sort of high-powered and high-end GIS tools that you can use, but nobody here knew how to use those, and so we decided it would probably be best to write our own. We wrote the GIS functions in a programming language called MATLAB, which is really good for number crunching and prototyping. It's used by a lot of scientists and engineers for data manipulation and representation. Talking about MATLAB is a whole other thing, so I'm not going to get into that. These functions for creating the maps are compiled on a Unix server, and then that same Unix server has the website running on it. And the website is created using a combination of HTML and PHP. HTML is, of course, the main method of presenting information on the World Wide Web, and PHP is a really cool programming language for manipulating HTML forms and other stuff. Any programmers who want to be able to do cool stuff with web pages, I really recommend PHP, by the way. It's a very, very cool language. If you're already a programmer, it's pretty easy to learn, and it's just great. It completely eliminates the need for a lot of back-end CGI stuff in your websites. Okay, so for you non-technical types, sorry for the gobbledygook, but I was really excited when I learned PHP because it was just very cool. And it makes it possible to do things like when the user goes to the website and enters, let's say they enter an address. So they might say house number 234, street name Hollywood Drive, city name, Los Angeles, state, California, and then you hit submit. Now, let's say there's more than one match for Hollywood Drive. Oh, I don't know. Let's say there's North Hollywood Drive and South Hollywood Drive. So what it does is it finds all the matches for Hollywood Drive and comes back and presents those in a pop-up list. A lot of the time, people don't even know how to spell the street that they're looking for, whether it's a drive or an avenue or whatever. So you can enter as much of the street name as you know. So even if you don't know how it's spelled necessarily, let's say it's Alistair Drive and you don't know whether it's Alice, A-L-I-S-T-E-R or A-L-I-S-T-O-R or something, you just enter as much of the name as you're sure of, and then it'll come back and give you all of the options in a pop-up. And so then you just choose the right one. So it's very cool. And this, it does the same thing with the city name. If you're not sure of the city name, it comes back and offers you a list of the matching cities. So when you're done with that sort of dialogue with the web page, it finds the address that you've asked for, crunches on the address for a while, producing the map using the parameters that you've specified, paper size, etc., and then comes back and gives you, boom, your printer-ready file appropriate for the kind of embosser you've got. So now we kind of get to, I mean, all that stuff is pretty tricky, but now we get to kind of one of the trickier aspects of things. As you know, when you probably know, when you open a file in Windows, it knows usually what application created that file. So, for example, the Tiger printer, the embosser from ViewPlus, has appropriate Windows drivers for it. And when you open a PRN file, which is the Tiger printer ready format, it knows that that's a Tiger file, and it opens up the Tiger viewer, and you can then print it directly to the Tiger from there. So when you download a PRN file from our website, it is seamless. The Tiger software knows what to do with that. Now, things are still a little bit iffy with the other embosser manufacturers. So one of the things that we're going to be doing with this testing program is to kind of find out which Braille embossers are working better than others. And I think that we as users of these different types of embossers need to provide feedback to our the manufacturers of our equipment to let them know, hey, we really need you to supply Windows drivers that are appropriate for these Braille graphics files so that I can print out my maps and so on. So once you print out your map, I'm going to get non-technical. Okay, non-technical warning. Okay, so this is now I'm going to be describing what the maps actually look like after you download the map and have it in your hot little hands, what kinds of features there are on the maps. Now, one of the problems in the past has been every time you get a new map, you have to sort of learn the new, almost language of that map. Each map producer or cartographer had their own language, their own lexicon, their own set of symbols, their own way of representing streets or bus stops or benches or whatever. For this reason, we felt it was extremely important to produce highly standardized maps, maps that had a certain set of features that everybody could know they were always going to find on the maps. These features include streets, street labels, a title, a scale, and a legend. Also associated with the map is a key that tells you what the labels for each street are. This kind of standardization allows people to learn our map language, the sort of features of our map set, once. Once they learn it, they will know how to interpret every map that they see after that. So let's start by talking about the streets, which are the main feature on every map. Each street is just a line. Maybe it's curvy, maybe it's wiggly, maybe it bends at certain angles, but every line is a street. Where they cross one another, those are intersections, and you can easily see which streets run parallel to one another and which streets are perpendicular and so on. So it's very easy to trace a line on a map and be able to trace the contour of a particular street. The labeling is done at the edge of the map, around the border of the page, where the streets hit the border of the map, and that prevents you from having to search all over the entire area of the map for labels. But even more than that, it prevents the labels from getting in the way of the streets. So all you need to do is look around the border of the map, find where the street hits the edge of the map, and that's where the label is going to be. I want to add a footnote here about the labels. There are a couple of things worth commenting on. One thing is that the labels, the Braille on our maps, is always right side up. You never have to wonder whether Braille is at some weird angle or is vertically oriented or anything like that. The Braille is always right side up on the maps. Also, each label for every street is abbreviated to a specific number of characters. That number of characters is customizable by the user, so you could decide whether you want 2 characters, 3 characters, or 4 characters, or whatever, to be in each label. But each one will have a specific number of characters, so it's really easy to spot the labels and distinguish them from a line or from some other feature on the map. The labels themselves, the abbreviated labels, are automatically generated by the computer to be mnemonically associated with each of the actual street names. So they're abbreviated such that, like, Main Street might be MNS or something like that. In generating these labels, of course, the computer also makes sure that each street is uniquely identified so that no 2 labels are alike on a given map. Okay, at the very top of the map is a Braille label that says what the map is. So if you asked for a map of 1534 Main Street, it says up at the top of the map, 1534 Main Street. Then at the upper right-hand corner of every map is a scale indicator. That scale indicator consists of two parts. It's a braille label that says a distance. So maybe it says 500 feet or 1,000 feet or 200 meters if you've chosen to represent things in metric units. And then just beneath that label is a line. And that line is however long the label says it is. So if it says 500 feet and you look right underneath that 500 feet, that line then is 500 feet long. Another feature of every map is a little block at the center of the map that shows you the location that you requested. So if you requested an address, the little block is actually placed as close as we can figure to where the building is that has that address. So you can actually see which side of the street it's on, and if it's on a corner, you can see which corner it's on, and you can plan your approach to that location accordingly. The only thing that really remains to be talked about as far as the physical map is the key that's associated with every map. The key is a braille document that just tells you what each street name is and how it's associated with each of the labels. It's arranged alphabetically by label, so that makes it easy to look up a particular street by its abbreviation. There's lots of information included on each key, such as, of course, street name and what direction the street runs, whether it's east-west or north-south. And it's also, of course, possible to include all sorts of other information on the key, such as how many lanes of traffic there might be, and so on. I think I've described it pretty thoroughly. I want to tell a little bit about what some of the features are that we're hoping to add in the future. One thing that always comes up is, what if I don't have a Braille embosser? Which many people don't. I mean, we're hoping, of course, that people will have access to one, maybe at a local support institution like a lighthouse or something like that. But, of course, many people live in rural areas and they may not be able to gain access to those sorts of things. So what we'd like to do is be able to provide a way on the website of simply channeling your files directly to a professional Braille production place. So all you need to do is enter into some sort of agreement with that place and they'll produce your maps for you and send them to you. Of course, you won't get them right away, but you would get them within a reasonable amount of time, and certainly that would be better than not having access to the maps at all. Also, we'd really like to provide a telephone interface so that folks will be able to dial up a phone number and use a speech and touch tone interface to ask for a map. And of course, in that situation, that would also be produced by a third-party Braille production facility. Also, currently our maps are only of the United States, and that's because our data was provided by the U.S. government free of charge. We'd love to be able to produce street maps of Europe or Asia or Canada, Mexico, and other places, because this is something that blind people all over the world would really benefit from. Unfortunately, that sort of information needs to be licensed, and that costs money, so we're working on being able to do that. Another thing that we're really interested in doing is being able to provide an interface between GPS, meaning the Global Positioning System, and TMAP. For example, we would really like to be able to have people who use GPS be able to mark points of interest as they go from place to place, such as restaurants or intersections of importance, and be able to upload those points of interest files to our website. And they could then use those points of interest to generate new maps, so maps that would include not only the streets, but of course markers that would indicate the locations of the points of interest that they had earlier marked as they were walking around in the environment. This would be an extremely powerful feature and very useful for orientation mobility specialists as well as travelers who were marking new locations and wanted to be able to understand where those locations were relative to one another. So that would be very, very exciting. And what that would really enable us to do is go to a whole new level of mapping because, of course, that feature would let us be able to mark things very specifically. We could mark the locations of subway entrances, bus stops, libraries, hospitals, all sorts of things. And then people could ultimately be able to share those with one another so that if I have, let's say I've marked all of the subway entrances in Manhattan, I could then let everybody have access to that file and then you'd be able to download a map showing where all the subway entrances were. There are all sorts of possibilities that this technology really opens up. We're just scratching the surface. We're truly poised at the beginning of a new era of tactile mapping. That brings me to a final closing thought about maps and maps for blind people. It's a popular myth that blind people can't use maps. I and many of the other researchers in tactile cartography take issue with that. And it's been shown that blind people with proper training can certainly use maps. Now, there may be people who don't like to use maps, but there are sighted people who don't really like to use maps either. And then, of course, there's this sort of chicken and egg problem in that young people, young blind people, that is, may not get the exposure to tactile maps at an early age that young sighted children do. And therefore, as they grow older, they're unfamiliar with how to read and understand tactile maps. So that's one of the things that we're really hoping to sort of bootstrap is the education process by providing these essentially free tactile maps to anybody who wants them. We're hoping that teachers and orientation, mobility instructors, and so on will start using tactile maps much more with young blind children so that we can break the cycle of map illiteracy, cartographic illiteracy, if you will. What we'd like is to be able to provide this empowering information to blind adults so that they can get to their offices, schools, appointments with a greater level of confidence and information. This kind of geographic information is stuff that has never been available before. And I think, that this kind of information is extremely empowering and very important to gaining equal access to society. It sounds grandiose, but really, imagine what sighted people would do without maps. The sighted people I know would revolt. I mean, maps are so crucial to being able to get where you want to go that nobody would put up with a lack of maps, no sighted person. And blind people we've just been okay with it because we've never had them, and so we didn't miss them. But you know what? I think that is going to change because now we can have them. We're entering a new age when this kind of information is not only available, but is our right to have and will be of incredible benefit to us. So I'm really excited about what's going to be happening over the next couple of years with the accessibility of maps and geographical information. And I really hope that you are too, because the people out there, you guys, are the ones who are going to make the change by demanding from our institutions of learning and service that we be given access to this kind of geographical information that we've never had before. I certainly hope to be hearing from many of you about this project. Anybody who's interested in participating, I want your help. So here's the part where I tell you how to get in touch. By telephone, please call 415-345-2013. To send us email, you can send a message to tmap@ski.org. If you want to go to our website and learn a little bit more about the project, although you've just learned quite a bit more about the TMAP project than I think is even written on our website, you can go to http://www.ski.org/TMAP. Now, the thing that you can do at that website is fill out a little form that gives us your name and your email address, and we can keep you in our database then, and you'll be kept informed about what's going on with TMAP and so on. So I think that's about it for the info about TMAP. I really want to thank you for listening, and of course, I really want to thank Larry for giving me the airtime here. Blind Cool Tech is a very cool podcast, and of course, podcasting is pretty killer too. So I think Larry deserves a really big hand for providing this kind of a network in the community and keeping people informed about what's going on. So thank you, Larry, for all your cool help. This is Josh Mealy signing off.
Okay. Fantastic. Thank you, Josh. I know our listeners will be very interested in this. I know I am. And that is going to do it for today's Blind Cool Tech. If you would like to leave an audio comment, the number is 206-984-9203. Our email address is blindcooltech@gmail.com. And the web address is aph.org/tech/vct.htm. Y'all have a great one, and we will see you next time.